to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Makassa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning and welcome to a special Eco Wisdom Conversations Nature Inspired podcast. It's being hosted on the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show right here at CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today, you are going to hear two phenomenal leaders, developers in the nature forest medicine world. The co-founder and co-director of Eco Wisdom, Dr. Carrie Crow, an international speaker, thought leader, nature healer expert, Carolyn Crowley. Let's get into that program now. Eco Wisdom Conversations Nature Inspired Podcast. It is being hosted on the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show here at CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at CJSFCA. Today you're going to hear two phenomenal leaders, developers in the nature and forest medicine world, the co-founder and director of Eco Wisdom, Dr. Carrie Crow, and our special guest, Carolyn Crowley, who is an acclaimed nature health expert on nature and forest therapy, who will share expert opinions and overviews on cultural appropriateness and the importance of Indigenous inclusion. We are lavishing a banquet of delectable information, and so without further ado, I'm going to have Dr. Carrie introduce others that are here in this conversation. Eco Wisdom is conversations about something that is being popularized, but people don't know the depths of. So we are going to go into helping you know and understand more about what nature and forest healing is about.
Thank you, Charlotte. And I want to say that I am so excited to have Carolyn join us today. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for being here with us. What a pleasure it was to have you come and speak to our group of trainees as nature and forest therapy guides. And it really resonated deeply. So now here we are able to spend this time with you again. So we are so pleased, as I said, to have Carolyn here. And I want to pass it over to her so she can actually introduce herself, because she's been involved in so many amazing projects doing such important work. Carolyn, welcome.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, everyone. And thank you for the invitation to share with everybody today. So my name is Carolyn Crowley. My pronouns are she and her. I was born in Mi'kma'ki territory, which is also known today as Nova Scotia. But I live in Toronto. And so Toronto, or Takaronto, has been my home since a young child. So I've been here for 50 years. My ancestry, I'm Mi'kmaq, Black, and Irish. And so I was very thankful that I had the opportunity to grow up with a deep relationship with the land, and those teachings of having a relationship filled with respect and gratitude for all that creation offers us in our day-to-day life was nurtured in me as a young child. And so I operate a business called Misanokama. And that translates from Mi'kma'ki to English to all my relations. And what that is referencing is all of our relatives that are not just human relatives, but thinking beyond the human world. And so looking at our relationships with the stones or the mineral family, looking at our relationship with the plants relatives as well as the animal relatives and seeing them as part of our extended family. And so that concept, you know, all my relations is looking at all of these beings as part of family and to treat them with the same respect and love and gratitude as we treat our human loved ones. So the work that I do focuses upon, you know, I guess you could say reconciliation. You know, this word reconciliation is a buzzword that's often spoken about that needs to happen with Canadians and Indigenous peoples or the state and Indigenous peoples. But it's also important to note that reconciliation also needs to happen with the land because the land has been and continues to be greatly harmed. And so I say reconciliation because when we really look at that definition of the word reconciliation, it, when you look at the Webster Dictionary, it kind of speaks of restoring friendly relations. And if we look at history and we look at the true history of what's known today as Canada, that friendly relations was a very short period of time in history. And so, you know, but I also use that word reconciliation so to put action into. So that's where people connect with the land, slow down, tune in through their senses. I share about the foods and medicines growing. And it's important to know that, you know, the work that I'm doing is creating that opportunity for people to return home to that relationship because all of our ancestors at one time and place throughout history were in a deeper, more meaningful relationship with nature or with creation that was culturally specific and unique to where people were located. But throughout history, people, many peoples have been violently severed from those relationships. So that's a little bit about the work I do, other than, you know, other kind of conservation stewardship programming that I do and starting that with turtle protectors, Michigan Gajajuan, which is an initiative that I started with somebody in the park where I'm living to support those turtle relatives.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for introducing us to the wonderful work that you're doing. And you'll notice, our listeners will notice that we have Laurel Goodings with us as well. She's the creative director for EcoWisdom and a nature and forest therapy guide. And we also have Kim Dunlop, who is a leader of our mentors. And she's also a nature and forest therapy guide certified with EcoWisdom. So you'll hear people popping in and out of conversation here as we explore some interesting ideas. I thought, you know, maybe we could put our conversation in the context of what EcoWisdom is doing. Does that make sense, Charlotte?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So, you know, EcoWisdom is taking a sort of a somewhat unique approach to nature and forest therapy in that we're really interested in inclusion and accessibility. And most of our guides and trainers, including myself, we have lived experience with disability or chronic illness. And so we have not been prominent in the vision of many members of society when they think about nature and when they think about nature guiding or nature therapy, especially providing the nature therapy, maybe as recipients of nature therapy. But we flipped that around and we have really skilled people like Kim and Laurel here who bring their expertise and their background and their knowledge and their life experience to guiding groups of people. And so we are heavily immersed in the disability sort of realm and thinking about inclusion and expanding that circle and challenging ourselves to expand that circle in with the same kind of respect that we want as people with disabilities. And so we have, you know, we have guides who are gender diverse. We have guides who are diverse in many, many different ways. And we are constantly challenged to think about how do we offer this training? How do we offer our programs in a way that is accessible, inclusive, respectful, compassionate, And ultimately, the work that we do with ecoism is tied to the land. So ecoism is run out of the Ecowisdom Forest Preserve, which is where my partner Dave and I live off-grid, and we live in what I refer to sometimes as beautiful but sometimes inconvenient ways, where we are melting the snow to get the water for a water source in the winter, for example. But it is our honor and our pleasure to do this as part of us working through our reciprocal relationship with this land that has provided me personally with so much healing, so much accompaniment, so much comfort when I need it most and when I continue to need it most. And ongoing, it's so generous, the land. And we live with the animals. So we have wild roaming moose and wolves and deer and yeah, we've got some new birds that came this morning. Anyway, so they have allowed us to occupy this land with them. And so we're using the solar panels to power our computers to like run these programs that are sometimes often virtual, whether it's training or programming. And we come back to and we incorporate ritual that's on this land. So we'll have the fire going, for example, at the end of a program and let people just sort of absorb this land virtually. So I just wanted to sort of put that out there as the context for our conversation. And this is what I mean, I'm just so thrilled to have Carolyn come and be part of this work that we're trying to do to understand equity, inclusion, reconciliation, how we can take these steps forward. So I just wanted to open it up and sort of see if anybody wanted to say anything about the sort of somewhat different way that we're approaching nature and forest therapy. It is different in terms of what's out there. And just anybody want to jump in?
I think you're talking about is another I inclusiveness. The show, this podcast series, Echo Wisdom Conversations, is being hosted by the program Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon at CJSF. And at CJSF Simon Fraser, the campus is on a mountain and there are many trails. One day I was waiting for the bus and I saw a sign that said something about bears, and I was talking to my brother and he said, "Girl, you better get out of there. They got bears up there running around." But we haven't had any incidences of bears attacking you and Dave in the preserve area. And I think a different conversation too, when we talk about inclusiveness and people with disabilities, but also intergenerational. Many colleges are now talking about neuroscience and brain plasticity. So I was really excited when I was telling someone about Eco Wisdom being on aired on CJSF. They said, "Oh, you talk about brain plasticity, how things change connections. This group really gives an opportunity in its conversations to connect. So much works to talk about." The differences in Gen X or this generation versus the other. But we've been able to see with the way that the presentations are made in the park, some of the, maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the ways progress that you've had with the parks, doing things to make the parks more accessible. So again, it's intergenerational and it's something that helps connect to the tax dollars we pay. But could you mention a little bit about this inclusiveness going beyond just for seniors or for people that have lived experience of disability, how it helps even the caregivers. A lot of people, when people are discharged from, I get emotional about this, but post-surgery, I happened to sit in a hospital where six different teams of doctors after surgery came up to the people and said, they're going to have to tough out months of pain, and there's going to be, all they talked about was the pain. So I think these conversations give an opportunity to talk about some of the specific things that you learned as guides that help people to have a choice beyond these physical and addictive medicines is the only way to deal with disabilities and pain. So,
you know, one thing that comes to mind, Charlotte, is that we're flipping things around in that we're seeing ourselves as people with disabilities with capacity, and we're opening our hearts to all of the benefits of connecting with nature. And so we use nature and form therapy guide often, peer support. Leading to people with chronic illness, people with disabilities, as somebody else is the expert who's going to fix our relationships as reflect nature. Nature is diverse. Nature is adapting. We are diverse. And we need to learn from nature to accept ourselves. And so it all comes back to the land, but we are, when we think about these medical systems and stuff like that, and, you know, there's a long history, and it's not that medicine doesn't have a role. It's when that becomes the dominant way of being in the world and society, it becomes problematic, right? So we need to understand where power lies, and we are introducing this new approach where we have guides who have personal experience with chronic illness or disabilities so that they can model and demonstrate and facilitate deep conversations about inclusion and belonging. And that's, I think those are some really big themes that came out of the research, right? Right, Kim?
Definitely. That was a huge theme in all of the research that we've done so far. And I know personally, when I think about what I've learned from EcoWisdom, from our wonderful guides and teachers, and from all the people that we've, all our peers, when I'm in nature, I forget about the labels. I forget about, things slough off, and I feel more connected than I've ever been in my life. You know, it's a huge gift, just a huge gift. And to be able to share that with others is such a blessing. And it's so individual. That's the other part, is learning how to just sit back and listen is an enormous, enormous part of the program, part of learning reciprocal relationships, just seeing that every single person is such an individual, and every person, every piece of plant and nature brings so much. It's just this enormous, phenomenal gift if we open up. When we open up.
Yeah. And I think this is where that neuroscience piece comes in that Charlotte was referring to. We talk a bit about, because my background is in psychology and neurology, I reference a little bit about that. There are ways, neural pathways we can open through practices, right? But when we, and sometimes people need to hear that. But other people, it's more of a spiritual thing, or they have other, you know, once they have the direct experience in our programming, then something goes click. And they're like, ah, yeah, this is what I need in my life. But for some people, they want to hear the neuroscience piece of it. But in other situations, other settings, we don't go there. But there are these, really what we're doing is we're learning to be still. And when we learn to be still, we learn to be receptive. And when we learn to be receptive, we have this we receive. And then we have, and it just automatically leads to this tremendous gratitude, right? And as part of that, for people who have disabilities, who have been rejected and told that we're broken and this and that, and we don't fit, I've just heard just in the last week, now, two stories of people trying to get employment, get, you know, situations, and it's like, you don't fit our box, therefore you can't fit. Like, go. We're not going to adjust our box size. Forget it. Anyway, so given that context, it's such a gift to know that we belong, that we're okay, and that our relationship with nature can sustain us.
Carolyn, I know you've spoken about the importance of having Indigenous leaders or Indigenous teachings connected to this movement toward nature health. What are some of the experiences that you have had in connecting nature studies, forest health studies to the foundations that are there from Indigenous people?
Well, the first thing I would say in regards to inclusion is the importance of including Indigenous voices in this work, because these are the territories of Indigenous people. And a lot of the knowledge that's come through the practice of forest therapy here in the Western world, a lot of that knowledge has come from Indigenous ways of being and knowing, and in relationship with the land. And so it's really important, you know, and there's a responsibility there. When, like I said earlier, talking about reconciliation, there's a responsibility to include those Indigenous voices and to acknowledge them. And so what does that look like? I know when I've attended programs or when I've offered programs, you know, sometimes, like, well, when I attend programs, what I notice oftentimes is that that perspective or those perspectives aren't included, even though they're talking about outdoor education or nature connection programming. It's very dominated by settlers, and it's really important to include others in those conversations as well. So to ensure that racialized people are included in those conversations, and bringing in the gifts of what, if we have connections to our culture, how do we bring those elements to the practice of forest therapy so that we can see those similarities, right? Because when we look at that relationship with land, you know, there's so many similarities from, you know, all across the earth of how we were in relationship. And so when I offer my programming, and sometimes when I offer programming to like newcomers, there's so many times when people will say to me, oh yes, you know, back home, this is the connection. And so you build relationships, you're connecting with one another, you're relating with one another. So I think that's really important, is when we're thinking about the cultural aspects of this work, how do we find a way to bring that in and also to prioritize, you know, the Indigenous ways of knowing and being, as far as bringing in, you know, people that carry that knowledge as well.
Could you give an example of an Indigenous way of knowing and being?
Yes. Yeah, so like I said earlier, you know, seeing all of these beings as part of family, right? And so we talk a lot in the practice of forest therapy of the act of reciprocity, right? And that reciprocity is an ancient teaching of Indigenous people since time immemorial, that importance of never taking more than what you need and always finding a way to give back, because Mother Earth is constantly giving to us and people are constantly taking from the earth. And it's just kind of like, you know, if we can think about a relationship we've been in or we've witnessed where one person's constantly giving and another person's constantly taking with little acknowledgement, without little reciprocity, that relationship is in balance. Eventually, the relationship falls apart because the one who's always giving may eventually become tired of always giving without that reciprocity or acknowledgement. And so it's no different than when we see our relationship with the land, with, you know, with creation, that so when I think about that, that importance of reciprocity, of acknowledging and giving back, is really key for what we're receiving.
And you mentioned something about not taking more than what you need. During this season, where there's weather emergencies all over, and people are coming. Some people are coming to donate food or donate their skills, making food for people who are stuck on the road. And then there are the people that are just piling their cars up, taking more than is needed. So what are, how do we, how do, I'm asking this to other people, how do we challenge or move to the souls of people so that we do get that principle of giving back, but also not taking more than what's needed? If people are giving away 3 tires and you take 5 and you've got a 4-car vehicle, but how can we, is it through stories? What are some ways we can help draw people's attention to that being unnatural and unhealthy for us?
Charlotte, I just want to jump in and say, to echo what Carolyn was saying, that the central importance of bringing in Indigenous perspectives and voices in all of this. And I think when I think about the scenario that you presented, I think about Robin Wall Kimmerer's term enoughness. And we spend quite a bit of time exploring her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. And in our programs, we explicitly reference who we are learning from and where these concepts are coming from. Robin Wall Kimmerer is an Indigenous biologist and a brilliant scientist and thinker and communicator. And we talk about this concept that she presents to us of enoughness. And we find that when we're in this calmer state of receptivity and we are receiving things from the earth, they're not things that we're buying. They're not things that cost a lot of money. They're not things that are damaging the earth to obtain, right? They're not things that we get and then compare ourselves to other people because their thing is shinier than ours. It's the whole package, right? So we receive and we see ourselves reflected, and it goes so deep, and it can be so satisfying, and we come to understand that, you know, it's beyond gifts. It's like I'm trying to find the word, but it's like it's enoughness, right? Mm-hmm. And I find that living on the forest preserve. Is that, you know, yeah, we live in this tiny cabin. We actually don't have an insulated floor. We have to collect 72 bags of leaves to put around the perimeter to just and put up the snow around the edge. And, you know, it's a lifestyle, but it's enough. And so I think I just wanted to say, you know, that's what I think of when I think about, you know, competition and wanting things. And I think it's important to look at power. Where is power? And who's driving that, right? And there's so much wisdom in Indigenous approaches to life, thought, relationship with the earth. And these are the kinds of things we need to educate ourselves on. And I see myself as just, you know, I continue to strive to learn. I am no expert. I continue to learn. And I'm very grateful to the Indigenous teachers that spend time with me and members of EcoWisdom community, particularly the settlers who are struggling and endeavoring to find our place in reconciliation.
I was going to just chime in just with something that you had said there. Is like when I think about this, not taking more than what we need and that importance of reciprocity, like I see it as relationship, right? Because relationships are the foundation of everything in our lives, our relationship to ourselves, each other, with the land, and, you know, that importance of having healthy relationships. And so when I think of, like, from what elders have shared with me in my life, and when I think about, you know, this concept of not taking more than what we need. And, you know, like you were saying, Charlotte, you know, people today who are hoarding and that sort of thing. So when I think about this, it is because in this, a lot of times in this Western context, a lot of people are disconnected from community or sense of community. And so when we think about Indigenous peoples, you know, since time immemorial, living in community, right? Looking out for each other, right? So, you know, traditionally when, and still today, you know, when the hunters go out, they're not just hunting for themselves, they're hunting for community, right? To feed the elders in the community who may not have people who can go and hunt for them and so forth. And so it's really about looking out for each other. And when we, because we live in this capitalistic society, we are conditioned from a very young child